Morning, everyone. Today's daf and tzvachim is Kuf Yud Beis. We are in Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. We are right after the Mishnah, towards the top of the Amud. And Rabbi Shimon Ahecha, Rabbi Shimon, what is he going on? So, first of all, before we say what is going on, what are we talking about? The Mishnah yesterday, the bottom of Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, discusses how to violate Shchut Echutz and Halah Bechutz as it relates to a bird. So a bird, the procedure of bird, the complication is that the Torah requires that a bird be shechted in the base of Mikdash, not through the regular standard procedure of Shechita, but rather through Malika. The Kohen is going to take his thumbnail and insert it to the back of the neck of the bird and press in. So, and by normal standards of Shechita, that would render an animal nevela, or a bird a nevela. And meanwhile, over here, the Torah says, yeah, but that's the way Shechita is done in the base of Mikdash. And so, therefore, now that we have a new method of Shechita in the base of Mikdash, so how do you violate, we don't want to, obviously, but how do you violate Shechita b'chutz when it comes to a bird? How do you violate Halah b'chutz as it relates to a bird? So we had a Mishnah. The Mishnah gave us four different scenarios. I'm just going to quickly run through the four scenarios of the Mishnah. It's really necessary. Specifically to get through the next sugya, because we need to know these four scenarios in order to really understand and appreciate how to plug in Rabbi Shimon. Scenario number one in the Mishnah was Hamalukas of Bifnim v'Halah b'chutz, where you did Malika inside the Azar, which is what you were supposed to do, and then you brought it outside. So then you're going to be chayv. You're going to be chayv, obviously, on Halah b'chutz. Number two, second scenario. Malik b'chutz v'Halah b'chutz. You did Malika outside, and then you offered it outside, so then you're going to be pater. As we already mentioned yesterday, the bird is going to be nevela if you do that. Number three, hashochet esa'ot b'fnim v'Halah b'chutz. If you shech the bird inside, and then you bring it outside, you're going to be pater. Shechting a bird inside is not what the Torah wants us to do, but the Torah wants us to do Malika. And then scenario number four is shechet b'chutz v'Halah b'chutz chayev. If I do shechita outside and I do halah outside, you're going to be chayev. Now, number four is really it's interesting. We made this point yesterday. The Torah says by birds you do malika, not shechita. So what is this idea that if I'm taking a bird, a carbon bird, and I'm shechting it outside, so I'm in violation on shechut echutz, and Rashi said, yeah, that's right. That's right. So in other words, of course, if the bird were in the Azara, we'd have to do malika. But in other words, we're outside the Azara right now, and the Torah is marbit. The Torah includes that if I shech the bird outside the Azara, one is going to be subject to shechut echutz. And then subsequently, if he brings it outside, if he offers it outside, he'll also be in violation of Halah b'chutz. So those are the four scenarios in the Mishnah. Now, in terms of those four scenarios, so the Mishnah itself gave a summation. And that is that you'll notice the irony, that which creates a chiyuv inside the Azara is exactly what creates the Patur outside the Azara. Meaning, Malika creates a chiyuv inside, and if Malika were done outside, it would create a Patur. And the opposite is also true. Whatever creates a chiyuv outside, i.e. Shechita, if I did that in the Azara, so then that would create a Patur. So whatever's mechayiv you outside is potur you inside. Good. That's what we saw yesterday in the Mishnah. That's all according to the Tanna Kamma. And then Rabbi Shimon had something to say. Now, when I say he had something to say, so you'll remember in the Mishnah yesterday, I read the words of Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah, and that's all I did. No explanation. Because I know the Gemara right now is going to give an attempt. I'll read the words again, so we're familiar with the words. But again, I'm going to do very little right now in terms of explaining. Rabbi Shimon Omer, I'm just reading Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Omer, kosher chayav lam b'chutz, chayav na kayotze b'bifnim. Anytime you're going to be chayav outside, you're also going to be chayav inside as well. Shehala b'chutz, and offered it outside. Chutz, right, that part was a little confusing. Chutz min ashochet b'fnim amala b'chutz, except when you shecht inside, and when you offer it outside. Okay, those are the words of Rabbi Shimon. Clearly, he's coming to argue with the Tanna Kamma. That part's clear. What's he saying? Really unclear. Let's see the Gemara inside. So Rabbi Shimon Omer v'chulei hechakai. What is Rabbi Shimon going on? Ilei ma'reishakai. And so now what the Gemara is going to try to do is go through all four scenarios in the Mishnah like we just did. And it's going to try to plug Rabbi Shimon into all four. And as we're going to see, it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a real challenge. Number one, hamolagov bifnim v'ala b'chutz chayev. So if you do Malika inside and you offer it outside, you're going to be chayev, right? That was the first case in the Mishnah. Malik b'chutz v'ala b'chutz pater. If you do Malika outside and you do the halah outside, you're going to be pater, because again, Malika outside renders the animal nevela. Amalei Rabbi Shimon, and on this now Rabbi Shimon says, ki heich debifnim mechayev b'chutz amim mechayev. So Rabbi Shimon says, well, you know, just like inside, if you would have done Malika, you'd be chayev. Well, if I do Malika outside, I'm going to be chayev as well. The Gemara says, it doesn't work. Hai kosher chayav nala b'chutz, kosher chayav nala b'fnim in ba'yelei. Just from a language standpoint, it doesn't conform to the words of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is saying, well, whatever's true outside is true inside. Well, if this is how we're interpreting Rabbi Shimon, so then flip it. Well, whatever's true inside, meaning Malika, should be true outside as well. Meaning if I did Malika outside, I'm going to be Chayiv. It just doesn't conform to the words of Rabbi Shimon. Ela. So the Gemara makes this another suggestion. Well, if outside I did Malika, I'm not going to be Chayiv. Well, if I do Malika inside, I'm not going to be Chayiv as well. Again, it just doesn't conform to the words of Rabbi Shimon. Well, then the Rabbi Shimon should say, well, whatever does not create a chiyuv outside. And that's not what Rabbi Shimon says. Ela sefakai. So the Gemara says, okay, so maybe Rabbi Shimon's commenting on the next part of the Mishnah, which is, Ashochet of bifnim v'ala b'chutz pater. If I do shchita to the bird inside and then offer it outside, I'm going to be pater. Because again, inside the Azara, there's only one recognized way of killing the bird, and that's Malika. So if I do shchita inside and then subsequently offer it outside, I'm going to be pater. So shachet b'chutz v'ala b'chutz chayev. And if I shacht it outside and offer it outside, I'm going to be chayev. And again, according to the Rashi that we saw in the Mishnah, chayev on both. On shchuta chutz and hala b'chutz. The Amalei Rabbi Shimon, and on that Rabbi Shimon says, well, if you're not going to be chayv inside for doing shchita inside, you're not going to be chayv for doing shchita outside as well. So again, well, if Rabbi Shimon is trying to teach us about an exemption, so then the wording of Rabbi Shimon is kol she'ein chayavin. And again, if you look back at the Mishnah, that's not what Rabbi Shimon says. Rabbi Shimon says kol she'chayavin. So Ella, so the Gemara says, okay, let's try one more time. Well, if you're chayv for shchita outside the azara, maybe you'll be chayv for shchita in the azara as well. Yeah, but Rabbi Shimon says specifically, with exception to shechting inside and offering outside. So we're basically, right now we are at an impasse. We know in the Mishnah there is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. We know Rabbi Shimon's arguing with the Tanakhama. But after having gone through every scenario in the Mishnah, we simply can't fit the words of Rabbi Shimon into any one of the scenarios in the Mishnah, and we simply, at this point in time, don't know what Rabbi Shimon's coming to, the point that he's making and how he's arguing with the Tanakhama. The Gemara is going to start off now with two possible explanations. Amr Ziri Shchitas Behema Balai Leke B'nayim. So Ziri now is going to take Rabbi Shimon and explain him like this. He's not talking about birds. Meaning, even though the Mishnah in its entirety was talking about birds, Rabbi Shimon is changing the conversation. He's moving now to animals. And he's speaking specifically about shechting an animal at night. Now, we know that no carbon can be shechted at night. That's a basic rule, that you cannot shecht the carbon at night. A carbon that's shechted at night is not qualified to be offered on the Mizbeach. And so, if I took an animal that was shechted at night and offered it on the Mizbeach outside the Azar, will I be violating Hela B'chutz? So, if you would have asked me, I would have said no. Well, I mean, don't ask me, but I'm saying, but if you would have asked me, so I would have said no. Meaning, you shechted it at a time when it was simply ineligible to be shechted. And the Gemara now is going to point out that this is going to be the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon. V'hachi kamar. V'chein. And this is how you're going to have to read the Mishnah. Meaning, we're going to have to add into the Mishnah. Because really what we're doing is we're changing the conversation from birds to animals. V'chein. Hashokhe behema bifnim balayla. If I shecht an animal at night, v'hela b'chutz pater. Ah. So this is exactly what the Tanakhama is saying. That just like by a bird, if I shecht it in an inappropriate manner in the Azara and then offer it outside, I'm going to be pater. So similarly, by animals, we're going to say the same thing. If I shecht an animal at night, in the Azara inappropriately, i.e. at night, and then I took that animal and offered it outside, I'm going to be exempt because you simply shechted it at the wrong time. You disqualified it. Shachet b'chutz b'layla v'ela b'chutz chayev. If I shechted it outside at night and I offered it outside, I'm going to be chayev. Now, why should that be? Meaning, it was nighttime. Yeah, but it's also outside. Meaning, like we discussed earlier, meaning outside is already disqualified area. So there are other disqualifications, and so what? Meaning, you're already outside of the Azara, so being outside allows for more disqualifications. And on that, Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol shechayev v'la b'chutz chayev v'la kayotz b'bifnim. So, v'hela b'chutz. So Rabbi Shimon says, you are only going to be chayev for offering outside only if you would have been chayev if you offered it inside in a similar manner. Meaning, if I shecht an animal at night in the Azar, it's disqualified. And by offering it outside, I'm going to be pater. Same thing if I shecht it at night outside as well. So chutz, min ha-shochet of bifnim v'ela b'chutz. The only notable exception is shechting a bird inside and offering it outside. meaning that's the only notable exception to the rule. Okay, good. So in other words, so basically now what we have is a better understanding of the machlokes between the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon, and what they're arguing about is whether or not you shechten an animal at night. If I shechten an animal at night, so according to the Tanakam, it's disqualified, therefore I'm not going to be violating. If I were to offer it outside, I'd not be violating Hela B'chutz, and according to Rabbi Shimon, you would be violating the Isser of Hela B'chutz. Okay. Rava Amar. And by the way, Rashi connects us to a debate that we saw earlier in the Masechta, in terms of if I shecht an animal at night, so obviously it's disqualified. Obviously, I shouldn't put it on the base on the mizbech. And what if I put it on the mizbech? Should I bring it down or not? So you will remember, hopefully, that we debated that issue earlier. Rashi says that the debate that we had earlier actually is the debate that's occurring right now between the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon. Okay, Rava Amar Kabbalah Bekli Cholik Abenayu. Rava gives a similar explanation to that of Ze'iri, and that is that we're moving the conversation, the Mishnah, from birds to animals. And what we did is the Kohen collected the blood of the animal in a klichol, in a non-consecrated utensil. If I accepted the blood in a klichol, which means now that it's eno mekudash, remember, in order for the avodas dam to work, the Kohen has to do Kabbalah, and he has to do a Kabbalah in the Kli Sharis. If, let's say, it went directly from the animal to the floor, so it's disqualified. And collecting in the Kli Chol, it's really no different. So therefore, now we're talking about basically the blood spilling onto the floor, technically, right? Actually, it went into a Kli, but it was a Kli Chol. So technically, it's no different. So, according to the Tanakam, if I took now this carbon and offered it outside the Azara, I'm going to be Pater. Why? Because it's not fit to be offered inside, therefore you're going to be exempt if I offer it outside. It's disqualified. So Hamakabel Khobe Vela Bakhutz Pater. Hamakabel Bekli Khobe Khutz Vela Bakhutz Chayev. However, if I did that outside of the Azara, meaning I collected the blood, I shechted it outside, which again already is a violation of Shchut Echutz. And then I collected the blood in a non-consecrated bowl outside. So then that's going to, if I were then subsequently offer that animal outside, I would be chayiv. And again, why? Meaning if I did that inside, I would have been potter. Okay, yeah, that's true. But the difference between inside and outside, when it relates to outside, you already are in a disqualified area. So the fact that I collected the blood in a non-consecrated bowl, it's not going to take away the Isser. And here, once again, here's Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon Amar, kosher chayev v'la b'chutz, chayev v'la kayotze bo b'ftim. V'hela b'chutz. So Rabbi Shimon says, well, if I'm going to be mechayev for it, having done it outside, I'm also going to be mechayev for having done it inside. If collecting the blood in a chol, in a kli chol, results in hela b'chutz, collecting the blood in a kli chol in the azara also will result in hela b'chutz, with, again, one notable exception, which is the birds. With exception to the bird, if I shech the bird inside and I offer it outside, so I'm going to be potter. Because again, birds inside the Azara, Shechita is not recognized, only Malika is recognized. Okay, so what do we have right now in front of us? We have two working explanations of Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah. Although, admittedly, we're going to be seriously, significantly editing the Mishnah. We're in the Mishnah now, we're moving the conversation over from birds over to animals. But once we do that, and it's not a small step, admittedly, but once we do that, now we have two working definitions of what Rabbi Shimon meant. But however, the Gemara says there is one other way to explain Rabbi Shimon. If I do malika to a bird inside and offer it outside, I'm going to be chayev. Malik b'chutz v'ela b'chutz pater. And if I do malika outside and then offer it outside, I'm going to be pater. Right? We're familiar with that, meaning that's it. We saw that already in the Mishnah. But here now, listen to the second half of the Braisa. Rabbi Shimon mechayev. Rabbi Shimon says that if I do malika outside, I'm going to be chayev. Doing malika outside, you're going to be chayev. That's correct. So, Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that even though it is malika, and even though that normally renders an animal nevela, because this bird is a karban, even though it's been taken outside the azara, still malika will be recognized to the extent in which, if he then subsequently offers it outside, he's going to be subject to hela b'chutz. Now, Rabbi Shimon, hasam kai, vitzni. Now that we know this position, Rabbi Shimon, now that we have this brice and we have such a mesorah, we'll go back into the Mishnah and we'll just simply plug this into the Mishnah. And here's now how we're going to read the Mishnah. Kol shechayav v'nalav bifnim, v'hela b'chutz. If you're chayav inside and you offered outside, you're going to be chayav. So chayav v'nalav b'chutz. If I do the same act, in other words, we're talking now about malika. If I do the same act outside, so then I'm going to be chayav as well. So now we have one last understanding of Rabbi Shimon, and we don't have to move the conversation from birds over to animals, and so that's what Rabbi Shimon meant in the Mishnah. Okay, Adkan. So that formally, not informally, concludes yesterday's daf, and that is the possible explanations of what Rabbi Shimon meant. Okay, the last Mishnah of the 13th parak of the Masechta. So if I accepted blood of a carbon chatzos in one kos, which as Rashi points out is what you're supposed to do. It's normal. Meaning the Mishnah over here is going to start off with the normal scenario. This first case of the Mishnah, Rashi points out, is just simply going to set us up for the rest of the Mishnah. So if I accepted the blood of a carbon chatzos in one cup, nasim b'chutz v'chazav nasim b'fnim, and then I took the cup outside, and I did an application outside the Azara, and then I brought it back inside, and I offered it inside. So bifnim v'chazav v'nasim b'chutz, or reverse. I did an application of this blood inside, and then I brought it outside, chayev. In both of these scenarios, the person is going to be violating the Isser in the Torah of offering a carbon outside the base of Mikdash. And it doesn't matter what the order was. Now, it's true that once the blood's taken outside, the blood's going to be possible through the psul of Yotzei. That, of course, is true. But, okay, so what? Meaning, we're talking about the Isser of Hela B'chutz. By definition, Hela B'chutz requires you to take it outside. So, and it doesn't matter whether you first bring it outside, then sprinkle on the Mizbech, or sprinkle on the Mizbech and then bring it outside. And in either event, you are going to be chayef. Shekulo rai bifnim, because all of it was fit to be brought inside. Now, Rashi over here points out, and you have to say this, because it's the only conclusion. Let's go with the scenario that you first sprinkled it inside, and then you took whatever's left, and you took it outside. I apologize. And then you took it outside. So, let's talk about that scenario. So, if you first sprinkled it inside, what's the rest of that blood called? That's called shirayim. So now we're talking about taking the shirayim and sprinkling the shirayim outside. So that's not the kapara, that's not ikuva. So why should you be in violation of hela b'chutz? So Rashi over here points out, because our Mishnah is following the opinion of Rabbi Nechemya. We learned Rabbi Nechemya just a day ago. Rabbi Nechemya says that you're going to be chayev even on shayare hadam. And so our Mishnah is in fact conforming to the opinion of Rabbi Nechemya, so says Rashi, which is really and so.
That's strange, no? Because if Mishnah is written and already accepted, it's not. So why would Mishnah reiterate it?
The Gemara never rejected his position. The Mishnah never rejected his position. Okay. Anyway, kibul dama b'shtei kosos. Okay, but now we move on to the next set of cases in the Mishnah, and now this is going to represent a chiddush. The blood of the carbon chatz is accepted in two cups. Okay, so for whatever reason, Cohen sitting there right after Shechita with two cups in hand collects both dama nefesh in cup number one and cup number two. Nasan shneim bifnim pater. Now, if I offer both of the cups inside, you're going to be pater. Now, again, that's kind of obvious. But this is setting us up for the next part of the Mishnah.
Pater in what way? Meaning it's accepted, everything is okay?
Pater, in other words, the Mishnah's perspective over here is just on whether or not I violate the Isser in the Torah of Hela B'chutz. So pater over here just simply means I'm exempt from Hela B'chutz. Now again, that's obvious because you didn't even take it outside.
Right. So that's what I'm saying.
So it's just, it's setting
so
us,
accepted,
it's just setting us, accepted. It's setting us up for the next line of the Mishnah. Shneim, in other words, it's not the Mishnah's focus. The Mishnah's focus is on just whether or not we're violating Hela B'chutz. Shneim b'chutz chayev. If I offer both cups outside, I'm going to be chayev. Okay, and here's where it gets interesting. Echa b'fnim v'echa b'chutz. Let's say one cup was offered inside and the other cup was offered outside, so pater. So under those circumstances, you're going to be pater. Echa b'chutz v'echa b'fnim chayev. Al achitzon v'apnim imechaper. One cup is offered outside and the second cup is offered inside. So oddly enough, you violated hela b'chutz. Well, I will not congratulate you. You violated Hela B'chutz, and on top of that, you also provided kapara for the carbon. Lama hadavar domer. Now, I'm sorry, before we get to the next part of the Mishnah.
Kapara for the carbon?
Yeah.
How does that work, though?
You had a second cup of blood.
Nobody was outside.
There were two cups.
Right.
So I'm sorry, I'm not being clear about this. There were two cups. One cup was taken outside, and the second cup was used as the
inside. Everything's okay.
The second cup was kept inside. One cup was taken outside. One cup was taken was kept inside. The first cup that was taken outside is going to be a violation of Hela B'chutz, and the second cup that remains inside will be able to provide the kapara. Now, really, what is that issue over here, and the Gemara is going to make this point very clear, is that when I collect the blood in two separate cups, how do I view cup number two? Now, when I say cup number two over here just simply means whichever one I use second. Okay, I'm not sure if I can, you know, if we can count one and two as I'm collecting it. But whichever blood I'm using second. So how do I view blood of cup number two? Meaning if one and two is really just but a unit, so whatever I do with one, two is just simply a shirayim, a remnant of number one. If, however, I have one and two and it's not considered a unit, but rather whichever one I use first, that's my dam, and whatever's left over in the other cup, that's what the term that we're going to use in the Gemara is nidcha. It's just simply, it's pushed off. So under those circumstances, now number two is simply halachically insignificant. Obviously, our Mishnah over here is telling us that we're looking at one and two as a unit. So if I take one and I bring it outside, so two now serves as shirayim of number one. So, but obviously the Mishnah over here can't be understood that way because it says that the panim is mechaper. In other words, the inside cup is actually providing a kapara. Rashi over here writes, "Apanim mechaper lahachshir azevach chedamim b'chol azvachim shnezarvu delo asa esa mishuri kayotze bo." In other words, clearly the way to understand the Mishnah is that the second cup is not just simply shirayim of the first cup. If it were shirayim, it wouldn't be providing a kapara. Obviously, cup number two is viewed as its own separate independent cup. But I already poured the cup of blood number one. Yeah, but you poured it outside. Okay. I know, it's a lot.
So the order of collection is not important. The order of application is important.
I agree. The Gemara says, I'll give you a comparable of what we just learned together, says the Mishnah. Let's say you had two carbon chatuses and you set aside one. Well, let's start chronologically. Let me go in the sequence of the Mishnah. You set aside one carbon chatus and you lost it. And you need a carbon chatus. So what you do now is you set aside now your second carbon chatus for your aver. You don't know where your first one is. And now what you did is you found the first one. So now you have two animals. And both of them now stand and are ready to be shechted. So you have, once again, a one and a two. So shteim bifnim pot, if I shech both of them inside, I'm not violating shchut echutz ehela b'chutz. Shteim b'chutz, if I offer both of them outside, chayev. So then you're going to be chayev. And presumably, not presumably, Rashi writes this, you're going to be chayev on both. And achaz bifnim v'achaz b'chutz, if I shech one inside and one outside, pater. So then I'm going to be exempt. Because the one that I shechted inside served as my kapara. What about now the second one? No longer necessary. Since it's no longer necessary, no longer a qualified carbon. No longer qualified carbon, I'm not violating hela b'chutz, or shchut echutz. Achaz b'chutz v'achaz bifnim, chayv al chitzon v'apnim is mechaperes. And once again, we are now walking into the same scenario where if I took the first animal, shechted it outside, I just violated hela b'chutz. Or I should say better, I just violated shchut echutz, and then if subsequently I then offered outside, I violate hela b'chutz. And the animal that has remained inside still is fit to be offered as my carbon. But I already shechted the first carbon. Yeah, but you did it outside. So the second animal now is still fit to be offered as my carbon, and therefore it could serve as a kapara. Kishem. Shedama poteres besara, kachi poteres es besar chaverta. Just like the blood exempts the meat, meaning it allows the meat to be consumed, so too it allows the meat of its friend as well. Okay. Rashi over here explains. What we mean by this is as follows. We're actually talking about the Isra of Me'ila. Right? Rashi, Kishem Shedama Poter Besara, the last Rashi on this Amud. Min HaMe'ila. Meaning once the blood of a carbon is sprinkled, so then the rest of the animal is now free and clear from the Isra of Me'ila. Not talking about a carbonola. Carbonola, the Me'ila continues until the entire animal is brought onto the Mizbeach. We're talking about any other type of carbon. Dizrikas dam motzio basar kachet kedushim min ha-me'ila. Removes it from the isra of me'ila. Diheba shaset ala kohanim. Kachi poteres is basar chaverta va'afa pishe psula. And va'ashacha shtem b'fnim kai. Rashi says that we're talking about where both of them were shechted inside of the azara. Under those circumstances, the blood being sprinkled is going to be effective for both the animal and for its friend as well. Its partner, so to say. And removes the Yisra of Me'ilah. Okay. We're on the very top of Kuf Yud Beis Amad Aleph. Bishlam HaBechutz V'chazer V'nasim B'fnim Shekula Rai Lios B'fnim. I understand the Mishnah when the Mishnah teaches me that if I collect it in if I collect it in one cup and I first offer it if I collect it in two cups and I offer one outside and the second one inside, I get that. Because both of them were fit to be brought inside. But if I offer one inside, what about the second one? The second one is Shirayim. Hamani Reb Nechemi Hida Amar Shayarei Dam Shikrivim Bechutz Chayev. So the Gemara says, yeah, but our Mishnah is subscribing to the opinion of Reb Nechemi. I already made this point, but it's because I knew the Gemara coming up ahead. Our Mishnah is subscribing to the viewpoint of Reb Nechemi that the Shirayim is still going to be a violation of Hela Bechutz. E Reb Nechemi Ema Seifa. Kibal Dama B'shtei Kosos. So the Gemara says, yeah, but let's read on in the Mishnah, where the Mishnah describes how you collected the blood in two cups, Nasan Shneim B'fnim, if both of them are offered inside Patra, Shneim B'chutz Chayev, Echa B'fnim V'Echa B'chutz Chayev. So if I offer one inside and one outside, Echa B'fnim V'Echa B'chutz, Patra. Thank you. If I offer one inside and one outside, I'm going to be Patra. Now consider, the one that I offered outside is now cup number two. Since it's cup number two, it's Shirayim. If our Mishnah is subscribing to Reb Nechemi, he says that you're going to violate the Isra of Hela B'chutz even for putting Shirayim outside. So then on cup number two, you shouldn't be Pater. Right, that's why I made the mistake in reading the Mishnah. What you should be is you should be Chayev if the Mishnah is following the opinion of Reb Nechemi.
How could be Shirayim if the first one has not been done? If
the first one was done. First one was done. V'hamar Reb Nechemi Sharedam Shikrim B'chutz Chayev. So Sefer Asal Natana Kama de Reb Elazar Rebbe Shimon. So the Gemara says, okay, what we're going to have to say, it's certainly not elegant, but we're going to have to say it, is that when we get to the next cases of the Mishnah, the two cups of the Mishnah, so that is no longer following the opinion of Reb Nechemia, but rather the opinion of Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, sorry, let me say it better, the Tanakama of Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, meaning whoever the anonymous Tana is who is arguing with Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, that's who the second half of the Mishnah is following. Damer kos ozedichu lechavera, like I described earlier. When I collect blood in two cups, there are two ways to look at the two cups. Either they are considered one unit, and when I do an application of one, the second cup is just simply shirayim of number one, or no, it's not considered a unit, but rather they're considered separate cups. Now, which one can I use to sprinkle on the mizbeach? Dealer's choice, whichever one I want. Meaning each one of them has a dam and nefesh. But once I use one cup, the rest of the cups are simply now disqualified through the process known as dichui. Meaning I no longer need them. And since I no longer need them and they're not considered one unit, so as a result of that, now they're disqualified. Once they're disqualified by sprinkling cup number two outside of the azara, I'm not in violation of hela b'chutz. L'maha davadom l'mafrish chatosav avda v'hifrish acheres tachtez v'acher kech nimtzes rishona. The Mishnah says, just to make this point as clear as possible regarding the collection of the blood in two cups, Gemara says, let me give you an analogy. Now, the analogy was wonderful. But lamad avadam alamali. But what do we gain with this analogy? Meaning, what do we learn together? Okay, good, it's an analogy. Good, it's a comparable scenario. Oh, that's wonderful. But did we learn anything new? So, hamani rebi hi da'amar avuda b'shas afrasha mesa. So the Gemara says, yeah. In other words, what we did learn is as following. We're going to be discussing this in much greater detail when we get to Masechta Temura. And that is, we know that there's what's called Chatas HaMesos. There are five of them. Five Chatas is where, under five different scenarios, the Chatas is not to be offered, but rather simply to be discarded. Don't let it graze, don't let it get a blemish, don't redeem it. It simply is to be discarded. Now, when I say discarded, I'm just saying it nicely. In other words, we allow the animal to die. But in other words, but we're not going to be offering it as a carbon. And one of the five chatas amesas is a mesa shenevad. In other words, it was lost. And what I did is I set aside a second carbon. Now, the first carbon chatas. Now, is that a chatas amesa? Yes or no? So it's the opinion of Rebbe, which the Gemara now is saying that avuda b'shas hafrasha. If, let's say, it was lost while I set aside the second animal, mesa, it is in fact a chatas hamesa. V'hachi kamar, taima de avda. The reason is because I lost it. Ha hifrish te chatos achrayos. But if, let's say, right from the very beginning, from inception, the Kohen set aside two carbon chatases, one, what's the point of setting aside a second one? Insurance policy. In the event that something happens to the first one, the second one, it will be there ready and available. So, chada minayu meikara olahi. And so now what that means is that this is not going to be an example of chatas hamesa. The second animal, although it will no longer be necessary once I offer the first animal, but it could be repurposed as a carbon ola. In just a moment, the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. Chatas is a female animal. Ola is a male animal. There's a lot of ways that things can get repurposed, but you can't repurpose a female animal to a male animal. I know, we live in the year 2018. I do know that. But, okay, but...
Super serious.
All right. Right, so chadami na mikara ola. So the Gemara is going to ask that question. So stay tuned. But anyway, uchid ravuna amarav da amaravuna amarav asham shenitak l'ra'aya v'shachto stam kasha la'ola. Now, in fact, we've said this, and we're going to continue to say this. This is an often quoted Gemara that if I have a carbon asham that is nitak l'ra'aya, where it is reassigned, it can be reassigned as a carbon ola. Now, generally speaking, by carbonus, you don't have this kind of flexibility where one carbon can be repurposed as another, but in a carbon asham which is no longer needed can, in fact, be repurposed as a carbon ola. And so same thing over here. If the two carbon chatases were set aside from inception, so then the second carbon chatas is not a chatas hamesa, but rather it is simply a carbon chatas that no longer is needed, but can be repurposed as a carbon ola. And now let's ask the obvious question. I understand how a carbon ashram can be repurposed as a carbon ola. A carbon ashram is a male animal. Carbon ola is a male animal. But me dummy, hausam ashram zachar ola zachar aval chatas nekeva hi. A carbon chatas is an akeva. How can I take a female animal and repurpose it as a carbon ola, which is male? I'm Rabbi Chia mi yustina, so b'si'ir nasi. So the Gemara says there is a case, albeit it's really limited. And that is when you have the king who violated one of the isurei kares of the Torah. Under those circumstances, he brings a special carbon. In fact, his carbon is so special that it's not a female carbon chatas, it's a male carbon chatas. So the scenario would be where the king violated one of the Isurei Chatas, one of the Isurei Kares. He did so b'shogeg. He's got to now bring a carbon. What does he do? A nervous king. So he sets aside two animals from the point of origination, two male animals. And so now, under these circumstances, so the first animal, which is in fact brought, that will serve as his carbon chatas. What about the second animal? Isn't that a chatas amesa? And the answer is no, it's not. Chatas hamesa is only when the second one is set aside after I lost the first one. But if both animals were set up from the point of origination, where he's setting both of them up at the same time, where he was maktish both of them at the same time, under those circumstances, number two now can be repurposed, and because it's a male animal, can be repurposed as a carbon ola. It's not going to be repurposed.
So what do we do with it?
Discarded. Yeah. That is the end of the 13th parak of the Masechta, and we begin. We begin this morning now the 14th final parak of the Masechta. Now we're going to start off the Mishnah. The Mishnah over here, this parak front loaded, right? Sometimes it just works that way, where all the Mishnahs are front loaded in the beginning of the parak, and then the Gemara has its discussion. This parak will take us a week to get through. When we conclude this parak at the end of this week, meaning Shabbos, so we will be concluding with Masechta Zvachim. Mazel tov to everybody in advance. So this Mishnah over here is going to open up with a continuing discussion of the Yisurim of Shchut Echutz and Halab Echutz, and then we transition. And we transition in this parak into the topic of really interesting history, Jewish history, halachic Jewish history, periods in time where we were allowed to take a carbon and offer it, not on the Beis HaMikdash, not in a central location, but rather we can just go right into our backyard and go right onto our bama in our backyard and offer karbanos on the bamas in our backyard. Much more of that to be discussed in greater detail throughout this week and this parak. We start off with the Mishnah with paras chatas, with the paraduma. Paraduma throughout the Mishnayos is entitled, nicknamed the Paras Chatas. It's an interesting nickname, by the way, for the Paraduma. Meaning, Chatas over here, it's not a carbon Chatas. The Torah does treat it, give it Chatas-like qualities, meaning carbon-like qualities. But as I've said already numerous times, the Paraduma is not a carbon. I know that primarily because it's not shechted in the Beis HaMikdash. It's shechted outside. Outside of Gimel Machanos. But anyway, the Paraduma, now the Girsa we have in the Mishnah is Shesarfa. Now Rashi and Tosfos debate in terms of what the correct Girsa is. We're going to work with Rashi. Rashi says that he believes the correct Girsa in the Mishnah is Sheshachta. Paras Chatas, the Paraduma that was shechted Chutz Migita, outside of its designated area. There was a pit that was assigned as a designated area where the Paraduma was shechted. And you shechted it away from the pit. So not only did you not shecht it in the Beis HaMikdash, but you shechted it not even in its designated area. You did not violate the Isser of Shechutei Chutz. Why not? It's really simple. Because it wasn't supposed to be shechted in the Azara. The only time that you're violating Shechutei Chutz Ela B'chutz is only when you shecht something in the... Only when it was supposed to be shechted in the Azara. So the Paraduma that was shechted outside of the Beis HaMikdash, but outside of its designated area, and a Sira Mishalech which was offered outside. Now, of course, you're not supposed to offer it outside. The whole point of the Sira Mishalech is to send it outside and throw it off the cliff. But if you offer it outside, in both these examples, you're going to be Potter. So the Mishnah gives us the rule. If something is not fit to be brought into the Azara, one is not violating the Isser of either Shchut Echutz or Hela Bechutz by offering it outside.
But the goat is brought inside.
The Gemara is going to ask you a question. It's brought inside, meaning yes, it's physically brought inside. It's not offered inside. Okay? But the Gemara is going to ask you a question. Harova Vanirva, and here we go now over our classic disqualifications. These are disqualifications that are so strong, so intense, and it pre-exists, it even entering into the Azara. So therefore, these animals are so disqualified that you're not, if you offer these animals outside of the Azara, you're not violating Shchut Echutz or Hela Bechutz. Hayrov Evanir, an animal involved in bestiality. Hamuktzav Anav, an animal that's involved in idolatry. Hamechir, an animal that's exchanged for a dog. Esnan, an animal that's exchanged for services of prostitution. Hakalayim, an animal that's crossbred. Trefa, an animal that has one of its internal organs punctured or severed. Yotzei Dofen, an animal that was born via cesarean. Shehi Krivan Bachutz, any of these animals that are offered outside Patur Shenemar. Lifnei Mishkan Hashem, Koshen Rai Lavo Lifnei Mishkan Hashem, and Chayavan Alav. Rashi notes over here, as the Gemara later on will ask the question, we already have a pasuk that establishes that anything that cannot be brought inside is subsequently not going to be subject to the Isra of Hela Bechutz, Shchut Echutz. Why the Gemara over here is quoting seemingly a different pasuk? So the Gemara is going to ask that question.
It cannot even be
The Kedusha is not even going to be Chal. Right. I think you're right. I think you're right. Bali Mumen, Bain Bali Mumen Kvum, Bain Bali Mumen Ovrim. If the animal has a physical blemish, and it does not matter whether it's permanent or temporary, Shikrim B'chutz Pater, if I offer them outside, you're going to be exempt. Again, not fit to have even been brought inside, therefore not subject to the Isra of Hela B'chutz. Continuing in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Bali Mumen Kvum Pater, Bali Mumen Ovrim Chayav B'lov Saseh. Here we have a theme alert coming up for this Mishnah. And that is Rabbi Shimon says that if something is not fit now, but a simple forecast into the future says that it will be fit. So Rabbi Shimon says that if I took such an animal and shechted it outside, I am partially violating the Isser in the Torah of Shchut Echutz and Hela Bechutz. Partial violation, what does that mean? Either you did or you didn't violate. So partial violation means that it's a lav, it's a negative prohibition, but it's not an Isser Karis. Why the split? The Gemara will explain why. Tarim shalohi giyaz manam. Two birds can be offered as a carbon. Only two birds can be offered as a carbon. There are many birds that we're allowed to eat, but only two are qualified to be brought as a carbon. A tor and a ben yona. A tor has to go beyond a physical maturation point, and a ben yona can only be offered if it is physically immature, only at an early stage of development. It's really easy to remember that. Because every time we talk about the Yonah, we never say the word Yonah. We always describe it as the Ben Yonah. So that means to say that it's young. It's childlike. So the Torah that Shalom Yigi is Manan, so if it's a Torah that's underdeveloped, or the Ben Yonah She'avers Manan, or the Ben Yonah that's overdeveloped, Shehi Krivan B'chutz Pater. So if I offer it outside, I'm going to be Pater, and again, the reason why is very simple, because right now, currently, it's not fit to be offered as a carbon. Rabbi Shimon Omer B'nei Yonah She'avers Manan Pater, V'term Shalom Yigi is Manan B'lo Sase. And again, Rabbi Shimon, fitting into our theme alert of this morning, is that if it currently is not fit, but it will become fit, so Rabbi Shimon says, if I offer in its current state, I violate a lav in the Torah. Just no Issur Karis. Osav Espino. Shech the mother on any given day, you cannot shech the offspring on that same day. This is the Issur in the Torah of Osav Espino. Lo Sishkatu B'yom Echad. You cannot shech them on one day. So right now, if I shech to the mother today, the offspring right now is premature. We're not allowed to shech to today. We have to wait till tomorrow. Mechusar Zman, any animal that's premature in terms of its development. The Torah tells us you cannot bring a carbon until it's 8 days old. V'yom Hashmini v'hala yeratzeh. So that means that for the first 7 days of its life, it's too early to offer as a carbon. It's Mechusar Zman. So if I offer either one of these carbonates outside the base of Mikdash Pater, and once again, Rabbi Shimon Omer. Hari Zebelo Saseh, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Koshu Rai Lavola Achar Zman, Hari Zebelo Saseh. So Rabbi Shimon says that you're violating a negative prohibition of the Torah. The Ein Bo Karis, however, it's not subject to the Karis penalty. The Chachamim Orem, Kol She Ein Bo Karis, Ein Bo Lo Saseh. And the Chachamim said there's no such, pun intended, there's no such animal. Meaning you can't be in partial violation of the Isser of Shchut Echutz Ela Bechutz. Either it's lav with karis, or it's no karis and it's no lav. Mechusar Zman Bein Megufo Bein Beba'alav. If it's premature in time, it's too early, either from the perspective of the animal or from the perspective of the owner. What does that mean? Mishnah goes on to explain. Ezem Mechusar Zman Beba'alav Azav Azav Aveyoles V'Ametzara. These four people classically lumped together, bundled together as people who go through a lengthy purification process. Generally, it's a week. For a woman giving birth, it's even longer. But go through a lengthy purification process. If they offer the carbon during the purification process, it's called mechusar zman. It's premature. Sheikriva chatasam v'ashamam b'chutz peturim. So if they offer their chatas and their asham during the purification process, so because of this state of mechusar zman being premature, so therefore they'll be exempt from the isser of shchut echutz and hal b'chutz. Olo sam v'shamayim b'chutz chayavim. However, if during their purification process they offer either an ola or a shlamim, so they will in fact be subject to the isser of shchut echutz and hal b'chutz. Why should that be? Rashi over here writes the reason why is because Right now they can't offer a chatas and an asham because they haven't yet finished their purification process, but they could offer an ola and they could offer a shlamim. So therefore, they still have a current ability to offer an ola and shlamim from an adava standpoint. Albeit, of course, they can't go into the Beis Hamikdash and they can't eat it in the current state they're in right now. But at least they could send it.
What if they had a carbon chatas for another chet not related to?
That's a good question. I don't know. Hamala mi baser chatas, mi baser asham, mi baser kachek kadashim. Offering the meat of a chatas, the meat of asham, the meat of kachek kadashim. Rashi over here says, as he said earlier, here we're talking about the kivsei atzeres. Mi baser kachem kalim, the meat of shlamim. Moser omer, the leftover of the carbon omer after the kmitza was done. Shte halechem, the 12 loaves of bread. The 2 loaves of bread that are offered on Shavuos, lechem upon him, the 12 loaves of bread, shayari minchos, and any of the leftovers of the menachos. And the point of the Mishnah, giving us this list of 8 items, is that what do all these 8 items have in common? It's really simple. They don't go on the Mizbeach. They're consumed by either Kohanim or the owners. And so therefore, there is no violation of Shchut Echutz and Hela Bechutz for these items, simply because these 8 items are not put onto the Mizbeach. The Mishnah now goes on to describe. Right, correct. The Mishnah goes on to describe other activities, other avodas actions, where if one did them outside, you're not going to be in violation. Now, quite frankly, we kind of know this already, meaning the Torah only lines up two activities that are done outside of the Azara where one's going to be liable. One is shechting, and the other one is offering, halal b'chutz. But we're going to learn together, however, that there are so many other avodas where if done outside, although, again, it's wrong, you shouldn't do it. None of us should do it. But in other words, in terms of incurring the liability of a lav and an iser karis have done intentionally, so one is not going to incur the technical liability. V'hayotzek, if by pouring oil on from a mincha, apostis, breaking up a mincha, all these we're going to be discussing in much greater detail when we start the Masechta Menachos. Habolel, the mixing together the flour and the oil, hamoleach, salting of the carbon, hamenif, waving of a carbon, many carbonists require a waving procedure, hamegish, the presentation of the carbon, of the mincha, to the mizbech, hamisader es hashochan, arranging the table, hametiv es haneros, lighting the neros. Now, mind you, by the way, we're talking about doing these activities outside. In other words, these last two that we just described, the table and the menorah, like in order to do these outside, that means that the table has to be outside and the menorah has to be outside.
Yeah, could you do that?
You're right.
Extra long candle.
Right. Anyway, the point the Mishnah is making, yeah, right?
Has to be 30 feet.
The point the Mishnah is making is that these are just simply not activities that create a liability. Albeit the chances of you violating these in these scenarios are slim. Just one second, slim to none. Yeah. But in other words, but you're not. The Mishnah over here is just giving us the long list of activities where they're considered avodas, yet they're not going to be subject to the yisur of halal b'chutz.
Certain times they brought it outside the echal.
There are, yes.
To show the people, yes, are not
correct. Hakometz v'hamekabel damim b'chutz pater. If I do kemitza or kabbalas adam outside, so you're going to be pater. V'ein chayavan lav lo mishum zaros. Now, in addition for all these activities that we just listed, it's a long list. For all these activities that we just listed, in addition to there being an exemption from hela b'chutz, also a zar, a non-kohen, if he did any one of these activities. Again, should he be doing any of these activities? The answer is unequivocally no. No. However, in terms of a zar doing an avoda, if a zar does particular avodas, he's going to be subject to misa bidei shamayim. What if he does any of the activities that were aforementioned? So he's not going to be subject to the penalty. Meaning he shouldn't do it, but it will not be subject to the penalty.
He does outside.
No. The Mishnah's point is like this. Like, just like all these activities, if done outside, it does not incur a penalty. If a non-kohen did any of these activities, not outside, inside, just simply a non-kohen doing any of these activities, he also won't incur the penalty of misa bidei shamayim. V'lo mishum tuma. Also, if a kohen is in a state of tuma and he does any of these activities, he won't be incurred the technical penalty. And again, I'll just repeat myself. Should he be doing any of these activities? Of course the answer is no. But in terms of the legal, technical, are you going to be getting a lav or misa bidei shamayim? The answer is no. V'lo mishum mechusa begadim. Also, if a kohen did any of these activities but not dressed correctly, wearing his big day kahuna, so once again, should he be doing any of these activities? No. Will he be incurring a penalty? No. V'lo mishum shelo richus yadayim v'raglayim. Also, a kohen did not prep, wash his hands before doing the avoda. So he can't be doing any of the avodas. If he does the avodas with his hands gone unwashed, so he's going to incur misa bidei shamayim. But now we're going to say it again. Those are for the avodas of shechita and zrikas adam and offering the carbon on top of the mizbech. But any of these activities that we just described, so should he be doing these activities without having prepped and washed his hands? No. Will he incur a penalty? Again, the answer is no. Okay. That takes us to the end of the first section of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah over here just created for us a lengthy list of items where parameters in which you will or will not be violating the issers of Shchut Echutz and Hela Bechutz. We're going to do the second half of the Mishnah now. It'll just take a couple of minutes. But here we go. Second half of the Mishnah over here in the last parak of Zvachim. Now take us through a little bit of history, if I may. Avram Avinu was born in the year 1948. It's so easy to remember. Okay, it's hard to forget that piece of information. Okay, and then a short 500 years later, So we left Egypt in the year 2448. Obviously, by the way, all the numbers I'm providing over here is from Bria Sa'olam, from creation of the world. We left Egypt in the year 2448, right? Probably you're familiar with the fact that we also received the Torah in that year as well. Okay, 40 short years later, we go into Eretz Yisrael. 2488. Thank you. So we go into Eretz Yisrael. Now for the next 14 years in Eretz Yisrael, so we are conquering the land, and we are dividing the land amongst the Shvatim. At this point in time, the Mishkan is temporarily situated in Gilgal. However, for those 14 years, there's a Heter Bamos. By the way, everything I'm saying right now is coming up in the Mishnah. I'm sketching it. I'm giving a rough sketch outside, so like we all get to see it, we all get to hear it, and therefore, as we go through the Mishnah, it'll be clear. Then what happens is that after those 4 years, now we're going to take the Mishkan and we're going to be moving it to its quasi-permanent place in Shiloh. Now, it's not permanent because it's Shiloh, it's not Yerushalayim. But it wasn't a short amount of time. 369 years now, the Mishkan is set up in Shiloh. That's now a central location. The Aron is there, and it's the central location with the Aron being there. There is no Heter Bamos. There's an Isser Bamos. For those next 369 years, we cannot offer karbanos in our backyards. We have to go to Shiloh. After Shiloh was destroyed by the Plishtim, and the Aron was taken, so for the next 50-some-odd years, so we were once again allowed to offer bamos in our backyards. Not until Shlomo HaMelech builds the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, then from that point going forward, there's going to be an Isser Bamos, and that Isser Bamos, according to our Mishnah, extends indefinitely. No longer after the building of Yerushalayim are we allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash. So basically, if you will, there are really, I was going to say three Batei Mikdash, but there are, from a historical standpoint, there's two Beis HaMikdash, one in Shiloh and one in Yerushalayim. And all this is encrypted in the Torah. Next week's Parsha, Parsha's Re'eh. So, Lo sa'asun kechol asher anachnu osim po hayom ish kol hayashar be'enav. Rashi over here, Anchumish points out that we are describing, the Torah right now is describing, not in detail because it hasn't happened yet, but the Torah is describing the first 14 years of living in Eretz Yisrael, where basically it's a free-for-all. Now, I don't mean that literally. But in other words, from a carbon standpoint, anyone can offer a carbon wherever they want. Ki lo basa manata ela menucha ve'ela nachla, because you have not yet gotten to the place of rest and that of nachla. Rashi over here points out, based on the Gemara's that we're going to be learning together in this 14th perek, menucha, that's Shiloh. Nachla, that's Yerushalayim. Asher Hashem Elokecha nosen lach. Okay. So basically, encrypted in the Torah is a reference to Shiloh and a reference to Yerushalayim. Let's see. Everything we just said, let's see inside. We are in the Mishnah on the middle of Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis. We're halfway down. And the Mishnah begins. Ad Shiloh Hukam HaMishkan, before the Mishkan was set up in the Midbar, Hayu Abamos Mutaris, Bamos would be permissible. Ve'avoda be'bechoris, who would be doing the avoda? The bechor would be doing the avoda. You remember the great debate that takes place between Yaakov and Esav in terms of who's going to be the Bechor? That's right. Meaning what they're arguing about is basically, it's pre-Mishkan, and so therefore the Avoda was relegated to the Bechoros. Not relegated, sorry, wrong word. Right? So the Avoda was honored to be offered by the Bechor. And so Yaakov says, let me buy it from you. Okay. So the Avodas Bebechoros. Mishuhukam and Mishkan, once the Mishkan was set up. Nesru Abamos. So Abamos now become prohibited. Va'avoda Bekohanim. Who's doing the Avoda in the Mishkan, in the Midbar? The Kohanim. Kachi Kadashim Nechalm Lefnim and Akalayim. Any of the Kachi Kadashim, Chatas, Asham, Kifse Atzeres. I'll throw that in right now because it came up earlier this morning. So they can only be eaten within the curtains of the Mishkan. Kachim Kalim b'chol Machane Yisrael. Now Kachim Kalim can be eaten in the entire Machane, because right now we're in the desert, and the third Machane is the entirety of Machane Yisrael. Baal Gilgal. They get to Gilgal. Now this is talking about the entrance into Eretz Yisrael. Hutru habamos. Bamos were permitted. There's a really interesting Rashi over here. Hutru habamos. Bamos were permitted. Kachim kalam bechol makom. Kachim kalam bechol makom. Yisrael. Baal Gilgal. Hutro habamos Rashi kedi alfin. Rashi. By the way, on this page there's no Tosos. Rashi covers columns 1 and 2. So hutro habamos Rashi is on the bottom of the right hand column. Ki alfin lakamim miish kol hayashar beinav. That's the pasuk I read in Parshas Re'eh, next week's Parsha. Kachay kadashim hanecham lo kar bebamas yachid. Now, Rashi notes over here that when it comes to kachay kachim, they are not offered on our backyard bamas. Why? Because kol she'in nidav v'nidav ein krov bebama katana. A rule that we're going to be seeing numerous times throughout this perek is that we can only offer voluntary karbanos in our backyard. V'ein mincha bebama. A chatas is not offered on the backyard. An usham is not offered in the backyard. Neither is kifsei atzeres. Neither is a mincha. So now, to the question of, well, what is going to be the perimeter in which I can eat my chatas and usham and mincha when I offer in my backyard? The answer is the question never got off the ground. In other words, because they're simply not offered in your backyard bama. Hilkach. Oluhu da'avai ve'ein echeles. So an ola can be offered in your backyard, but it's not eaten. And kachay kadashim can only be offered in central location. Central location during these 14 years was Gilgal. Okay, so back to the Mishnah. So kachim kalam b'chol ma'achan ha'yisrael. Bala Gilgal, hutru abamos. So during the 14 years of Gilgal, the bamos were allowed. Kachay kadashim ne'achal lefnim ne'aklayim. So kachay kadashim were eaten within the curtains, and now, after reading the Rashi, now we know. Meaning, the kachay kadashim were not offered in your backyard. They couldn't be offered in your backyard. No chatas, no asham, no mincha, and so therefore there's nothing to talk about. In other words, the only areas where the kachay kadashim were offered was in actual Gilgal itself. Well, there were curtains, there were some partitions around Gilgal, and so therefore the meat was only eaten within those partitions. Kachim kalim b'chol makam. And kashim kalim can be eaten anywhere, because they can be offered anywhere, meaning shlamim. Ba'ul Shiloh. Now, once we get to Shiloh, we're 14 years later, upon entering into Eretz Yisrael, beginning of year 15. Nesru ha'bamos, bamos now prohibited. V'lo hayusham tikra. The Mishnah over here chooses to give us some details regarding the Mishkan Shiloh. Mishkan Shiloh did not have a roof. Ela beis avanim bilvad milamatan vahiros milamalan. So what it has is it had stone walls and it had some sort of yiriyah, like curtain over the top. Okay, we'll see later on why the Mishnah chooses to give us this particular detail as it relates to the Mishkan of Shiloh. Vihi haisa menucha.
When does Rashi say batikro gag shel mesorin?
Right.
They didn't put the tikra is they put the yiriyah.
A curtain, that's it.
So the nesorim is sticks.
Right. Rashi just simply saying it wasn't made up of any kind of hard material. It was just yiriyah, that's all.
So what's the nesorim? Nesorim doesn't mean yiriyah.
Nesorim, that's what Rashi just simply saying what they didn't use. Rashi says they didn't use nesorim. Okay. Now, the Mishnah goes on to say that is menucha. Now, if you haven't gone through the Pesukim, you don't know what the Mishnah is talking about. We went through the Pesukim, meaning we now know that this is a reference to the menucha of what the Torah was alluding to in Parshas Re'eh. And in Shiloh, kachay kadashim nechal lefnim nechalayim. Kachay kadashim are eaten within the curtains. V'kachim kalim amayser sheni b'chol haroeh. Now, as it relates to kachim kalim, so this is interesting, because we know that once eventually we're set up in Yerushalayim, where can kachim kalim be eaten? Anywhere within Chomas Yerushalayim, the walls of Yerushalayim. But this is Shiloh. Shiloh didn't have walls around it. So where can you be? Where do you have to be? Where are you circumscribed in terms of eating your kachim kalim? And the answer is, as long as you could see Mishkan Shiloh. Balanova Givon. Now you get to the cities of Nov and Givon. I mean, Shiloh is destroyed, and now temporarily the Mishkan is going to be relocated to the cities of Nov and Givon. Why two cities of Nov and Givon? We're going to be discussing this extensively as we go through the Gemara. Originally it was set up in Nov. Nov was Ir Kohanim, was the city of Kohanim, And unfortunately, Shaul eradicated, exterminated the entire city. Because they harbored David HaMelech as David HaMelech was, as David was running away from Shaul. And so then, Nov was killed, and it no longer served as a temporary central location. It was moved to Givon. In any event, we'll discuss that more in the Gemara. But Baal and Nova Givon Hutra Abama. So once again, now historically, this now creates a short window of historical time where Bamos were permitted. Kachi Kadashim Nechalim Lefnim Neklaim Kachim Kalim Bechol Are Yisrael. Kachi Kadashim can only be eaten within the curtains, and Kachim Kalim can be eaten anywhere throughout all of Eretz Yisrael. Because again, Bamos were permitted. Baal Yerushalayim, and once they get to Yerushalayim, Ne'esru Habamos. So Bamos now become prohibited. V'lo hayolahen heter, and no longer do they become mutter. The other girsa in the Mishnah is od heter. No longer do they become mutter because once Yerushalayim is set up, the kedusha of Yerushalayim continues. I know we just debated that issue a couple days ago in the daf. V'yaisa nachala, and Yerushalayim is a reference to the nachala, meaning again going back to Parshas Re'eh. Kasha kedusha nechalam lefnim menachalim, kasha kalam amaiser sheni lefnim menachoma. Kashikadashim are eaten within the curtains of the Azara, and Kashikalim and Maaser Sheni are eaten within the Chomos Yerushalayim, the walls of Yerushalayim. Meaning Yerushalayim serves as the third machana, the machana Yisrael. Okay, we'll stop over here. I know there's more to the Mishnah, but this is a really good stopping point. So far now, this morning, we finished the 13th parak of Zvachim. We tried to figure out exactly what Rabbi Shimon was arguing with in terms of outside versus inside. Spent a good amount of time this morning doing that. Talked about echatos, which was collected in one coast, and echatos, which is collected in two coasts, and how to look at the blood that's collected in that second coast. And then we started the 14th parak of the Masechta, and this morning we learned a lot of Mishnayos. All the Mishnayos of the 14th parak are front-loaded into the first page of the parak. The paraduma and the seira mishtalech is not subject to shchut echutz and halabachut simply because it's not fit to be brought inside. Disqualifications of a karban that are so significant that it occurs even before the animal is brought into the azara. So one is not subject to the liability of shchut echutz and halabachutz. Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah continually tells us that if something is currently not qualified but will become qualified, so one violates a law in the Torah for violating that Isser. And then the Mishnah, we described a number of both parts of the Karbanos and activities where one is not going to be subject to the Isser of Hela B'chutz, either because it shouldn't have gone onto the Mizbech, it wasn't supposed to go onto the Mizbech, or simply because it's not Shechita, Halah, or Zrika Sadam. And then the Mishnah went into a discussion of when there was a time of Heter Bamos. There were two historical periods in time when there was an allowance to offer carbon in our backyard. One is for the first 14 years upon entrance into Eretz Yisrael, and two is the transition from the destruction of Mishkan Shiloh to the construction of Bais Rishon by Shlomo HaMelech.